Recovery Sort Of is a podcast where we discuss recovery topics from the perspective of people living in long-term recovery. This podcast does not intend to represent the views of any particular group, organization, or fellowship. The attitudes expressed are solely the opinion of its contributors. Be advised, there may be strong language or topics of an adult nature.
Hey, welcome back. It's Recovery Sort Of. I'm Jason. I'm a guy in recovery that also has a job.
And I'm Billy. I'm a person in long-term recovery.
And I am Caroline. I'm also a person in long-term recovery.
All right. So today we're going to talk about work in recovery. That is the overarching theme. And I think the goal is sort of to start out with the idea of like, how do you find work and what limitations do we have for what kind of jobs we can do once we're in recovery, since we have this past of, you know, addiction? And also, how do you find what you're supposed to do, right? Like, I want to say calling, but I know that's not everybody's belief system. And I do think that ties into it, right? Well, how you perceive the world is a little bit tied into how you view where you're supposed to go and work. And then from there, you know, eventually, whether it's on this episode or part two of this episode, it's going to be, how do we take our recovery into our work lives? And what does that look like as well? So I think maybe do we start with the idea of like, how do we perceive the world? Because I definitely today am a guy who believes in like sort of a calling kind of thing, or
a work soulmate.
Yes, I believe in a work soulmate. No, but I think when I get in tune with me through the process of recovery, I start to realize what I want and what I don't want. And maybe that is just to a small extent, like, oh, well, these are the kinds of things I want in my job, right? I want them to not be looking over my shoulder every moment. I want to just have clear laid out plans. I don't want too much pressure or responsibility. Like, maybe we just know that. Or maybe it's, oh, I feel especially like my life would be more purposeful if I did this line of work in particular. But I didn't always believe that in my recovery. So that's like not, that hasn't been around since day one. That's more of a newer thing for me.
So my immediate thought to that is, and this is going to be terrible to say, but how many people, you know, get into recovery and then they're like, I'm going to get into helping people and I'm going to be a counselor or treatment person or work at a rehab. And I don't know about you, but that doesn't tend to work out well, I don't think.
Which is interesting, because you would think like that fits right in line with the goals of recovery, right? Is that we feel better about ourselves when we help people?
Well, and that became my sort of, when you first brought this up, of became my thing is like, well, I think for some people, for a lot of people, when something you love becomes your means of making a living or your job, like it gets corrupted in some way.
Yeah, I remember hearing somebody say, what I do for a living is stay clean. What I do for money is something else way the fuck over there. And if I ever get that confused, I'm going to have a big problem.
And that's probably more my approach to things.
I don't necessarily know that that means we couldn't be in a helping profession, right? I think it's just keeping those things clear. Like, this is my recovery is what I do for a living, right? Like, that's what I need to do. My job and how I make money, yeah, I might like this line of work, but I need to pay attention, because if this line of work starts feeling unhealthy for me, then I need to do some other kind of line of work, right? That's not the important part. Like, I'll make money And this guy in particular happened to be talking about, he had all these sponsees that made more and, you know, got more back in taxes than he's ever made in a year or whatever. Like, he's like, but none of them stay clean.
Right.
And what's up with that?
Yeah, I think that kind of comes back to like how much value you're placing on money and not so much what you're doing, but what is your ultimate motivation? I think with the recovery thing, it does seem to be everybody's default, like at around 3 or 4 months clean, where they're like, I want to go into addictions treatment. I did a little variation of that, right? So when I went back to college, or I went to college with 4 months clean, decided to major in psychology, but I wanted to go into addictions research because I think I knew myself enough even at that point that I am not really, I'm not really a people person. So like therapy was never really like something that was going to, but I did want to, you know, kind of dig into the why and the how. I think the struggle with going into counseling, addiction counseling, that I've seen is that people really have a hard time drawing the line. And they start to get to a point where they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm sitting in these meetings all day talking about recovery, so I don't need to go to a meeting tonight because I've been doing that all day. And they start to kind of think their career is filling that recovery hole as well. And that seems to go poorly.
And that could be dangerous. Like it. So what I'm picturing, and I can't say I haven't kind of fallen into this myself at sometimes, right? They're the senior member in these groups that they're running or the meetings that they're going to with all these new people. And so they're espousing this great information and all this, but they're not going anywhere to get any other information from people that can help them, right? So in some ways it works, because I think when we teach others, we teach ourselves more and re-ingrain it, right? But at the same time, for me, and this happens, like, oh, I hit my home group every week. Well, when do you hit extra meetings? Well, every once in a while when I'm asked to share and hear my own shit, right? And then it becomes, I get a little less teachable in that place, because all of a sudden I'm the one who's got all the information all the time, and it's not about anybody else's information.
Yeah. Right. And what happens when your career is so tightly tied to your recovery too? Like what happens when you're an addictions counselor, but you relapse, you have a slip? What does that mean for your career? And do you feel like you have to, like in that instance, your recovery is probably already known, right, amongst your coworkers, your employers. So then do you have to disclose that? Does that result in a demotion because personally you had a slip up? Like, I just
how do you get demoted in addictions counseling? Right. You can't counsel people who have more than 2 weeks clean. You can only counsel the guys walking in the door still, you know, detoxing.
What I will say is that knowing I sponsored a guy who worked in, you know, addiction stuff, and he would tell me that for him it got to be just, it was overwhelming to all day talk to people about addiction and how it's fucking up their lives and what they're doing and all this stuff, and then want to like do that for 8 hours a day and then go home and have dinner and then go out to a meeting and hear about addiction for another hour and a half. And it just, he felt overrun with hearing talk about addiction. Like it was just like, this is fucking too much for my head. I don't want to go to meetings anymore.
Yeah, I worked at a treatment center when I had about a year clean as like a tech, not as a counselor.
Well, that's what most people end up as, a tech or somebody at a rehab or in a peer role.
Right, and not ever with the intention of that being like my long-term career goal, just as like a job while I was in school. And I liked it. I did end up I did end up changing from that job after probably a year and a half, 2 years clean, to going into nannying. And I would tell people, oh, it's the same job, I just make more now. Right? Like I'm babysitting. And I didn't find it to be overly but again, I wasn't a counselor, I was a babysitter. So I think it's the counseling part that has the higher burnout rate. But yeah, I mean, I know people that it's worked for, but I also know a lot of people that were counselors, addictions counselors or whatever. I know there's a lot of different qualifications that have gotten out of the field because it was too much. And certainly then obviously also know of the people that were counselors and then started using and had to get out of that field because the right. two don't really mesh. I mean, for me, like if I start using, like I'm not working anyway. Like that's my story, right? Like I don't hold a productive job when I'm getting high, but there are a lot of people who can.
Yeah, I always did.
Yeah, I was not that.
No. What do you think a sponsor's role in guiding someone is? Because I remember having this exact same 3 to 4 month, I want to be a counselor, I want to help people, right? And my sponsor kind of shit all over the idea. And like, I was like, all right, well, I ain't doing that. And I don't know if that was for the good or the bad, if I could have handled that kind of stuff at that point in time. But I've always questioned that. I'm like, damn, do we want to shit on people's?
I would say no.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
But what if we know better?
What was that?
What if we know better?
I think there's a way to try to get your sponsees to think through. So one of the things that I've done, I actually have a sponsee right now who is literally in school to become an addictions counselor and working in
Don't
the field.
Do it.
And one of the recommendations that I made to her was to talk to some people who are in the field and have been in the field for a while. And I actually connected her with a few friends, some that are currently working in the field, some that have gotten out of it after working in the field, just so she could get some perspective from people who have that experience. Cause like, right. Like I have my opinions and I have I know what I've seen, but like, I'm not the person to tell someone, yes, this is a good choice for you or it's not. But certainly someone who's working in the field or has worked in the field has some personal firsthand experience that they can share. So that was kind of I always want people to explore what's best for them. It's not my decision. It's not my place to tell them what's best for them.
Yeah, so, I would challenge whether your sponsor at the time ever worked in treatment or had that experience.
Yeah, I think he might have actually. But the interesting thing was, just thinking back to another situation that happened with a sponsee brother and his girlfriend, they were getting ready to like move in together, didn't really make enough money to move in together, weren't really even on good terms. And like, I kind of, when he presented the idea to my sponsee brother, I was like, dude, I don't know if that's a good idea or whatever. And my sponsor got wind of what I said. And he was like, why would you shit on his dreams? Like, let him try it out and figure it out.
That same
like,
sponsor?
Yes.
You shit on my dreams.
I was like, I do it because of you, Spons.
Well, I think there's also a big difference between a friend saying something to a friend and a sponsor saying something to a sponsee. Mm. Like, I think there's a lot more, value placed in something that your sponsor tells you versus your friends, right, as peers. So you have to be even more careful as a sponsor what you're saying because of that inherent kind of almost position of power that you hold, I think.
And that's tricky because all my sponsors have either ended up or already been friends. Like, we've already been friends or we ended up as friends. And so it's hard to make that distinction. And I've always struggled with that on the other end, not to go into like, should we sponsor friends as a topic? But when friends ask me, and it's like, part of me is like, oh, this is going to be tricky because I got to say shit that's uncomfortable as a sponsor. But the truth is, like, if I'm being a good friend, I'm going to say that shit anyway, right? A good friend, to me at least, is the guy who's going to say that and not just be like, oh, yeah, that's
yeah,
cool, buddy. Like,
some
I don't
loving,
want to co-sign
caring way
shit.
That has your best interest at, you know. Right.
But don't you think that there's things that you can say as a friend that you probably shouldn't say as a sponsor?
Like what?
Like, that's a terrible idea. Don't do that. I mean, I guess there's some circumstances as a sponsor you could say that, but in your case where he was like giving you career advice and just kind of shooting you down, I think a friend can do that because with a friend you're always going to kind of take it with a grain of salt. If your sponsor says that to you and you're like, well, I should listen to my sponsor knows more than me, like there just becomes more stock put in it.
Well, and I think maybe the learning there is that as a friend or a sponsor, really, our goal should be to help people question things and never actually tell them what they need to do.
Yeah,
right? Like, hey, that's interesting. What makes you want to go that route? And well, let's look at some of the drawbacks and some of the positives and let's really think about that and take some time and sit with, like, you know what I mean? It should always be about questioning instead of just, no, that's fucking dumb. Don't do it.
Yeah. I try to really avoid advice as a sponsor.
As a sponsor, right. But as a friend.
I don't want to advise people as a friend.
Yeah. Depends on if you ask what I would do. And I would preface that by what I would do, which is the same thing as I would say to a friend or a sponsee, you know.
Yeah.
If it was me in that situation, here's what I would do and here's why. These are my values. These are my morals. This is why I would. And, you know, I don't know. You have to sort out what your values and morals are.
I think I feel more beholden to those, like, boundaries as a sponsor. Like, I'm much more aware of, like, what my role is and acting within that role as a sponsor than maybe as a friend. Like, some of those boundaries and those walls maybe aren't as firm.
I totally get that from you too. I get you as a friend being like, yeah, that's fucking dumb. Totally get that.
And I don't, in some of my relationships with guys that I quote unquote sponsor, I am as a friend. Mm. I mean, I don't know that there's differences.
Right.
I mean, that's just me. The longer I stay clean, the more I'm just like, I don't know, dude. I'm here to help you in whatever way. You just need a fucking friend. Okay, I'm your friend.
Yeah.
Call me whatever you want.
Yeah. But there's still that obligation within that role to stick within some boundaries, right? I mean, this has turned into a very different conversation.
Let's get back to the job thing, right? I think I was just sitting here thinking, this is like relevant, I think, to anybody. We talk about the idea of really being about, you know, mental health and addiction and all that and recovery. But how many people do you talk to that are, you know, 34 and like, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up, right? Like, I think a lot of us feel lost and not guided into what really fills our spirit, as we would say in recovery. I don't know what the person out in the world would say, like, I just don't know what I want to do, right? Like, how do we come across that? And so maybe going back for the addiction piece and finding recovery, some of the difficulties, and Caroline kind of brought one of these up specifically, the idea of felonies, right? Yeah. Like, a lot of us have some kind of criminal record, whether that be misdemeanors, felonies, and what kind of limitations that places on people in recovery finding not just any work, but what they want to do. Like, what if you wanted to be a bank teller, or you wanted to work for the police or join the army? I don't know if felonies keep you up from the military or not, honestly, but they keep you up from a lot of things. So what do you do with that? Like, how do you combat that idea?
Well, in a lot of jobs doing background checks, I mean, you know, they got 30 applications they're looking through, and they just look through and, oh, record, bump, you go in the no pile.
Right.
Before they're even going to look.
Right, right. And it's not like we can say, oh, well, you work hard and clean up your record. Well, to get a felony off your record, you're talking 7 to 10 years. Like, that's quite a bit of time. And money, exactly. And
not cheap.
And for a lot of felonies, you're talking about looking at a pardon and then an expungement after the pardon. And I mean, I've looked into this for my own personal self. You're talking 15, 20 grand. Right. And which is ultimately why I was like, I could take some vacations. That shit ain't worth it, honestly. But yeah, I mean, I'm relying on some people sitting around the governor that say, hey, you should really look at this, governor. You might want to pardon this guy. Like, what? Why? Like, why don't we have some kind of established limit? Like, hey, you did this type of crime. This many years went by and you've done no other crime. I guess that comes off your record, so you can like have paid your debt to society and be free again.
Yeah, well, I think that's a whole nother conversation too.
It is. I just had to throw it in there.
I will
criminal
say,
reform.
Yeah. Well, criminal reform.
I think, and I when I got clean and came back to Maryland, I had 4 open warrants for my arrest, but my record is clean now, so mm-hmm. I can't really speak of this with super personal experience. But I do know felonies is something I hear a lot of people sharing about as a reason why, you know, they can't find a good job or can't work, you know, period, in some cases.
Felonies. I just can't work.
But
should've used that.
On the flip side of that, like, I also personally know a lot of people that do have felonies and have rewarding careers. And certainly there are people that, you know, wanted to go into a very, very strict career path that just wasn't possible, right? Like, there are some things that I think nursing is one. There's certainly some career fields that do just kind of become completely out of scope if you have, you know, a bad record. But there's other things that are open. My husband had felonies, and, you know, before he passed, he had an amazing career and was making really good money and was really good at what he did. So he certainly could have used that as an excuse to say, oh, well, I can only, you know, do this or that, and I'm limited by my background. Or, you know, but what he did instead was try to look and see, well, where can I start? And where can I go within kind of what I'm working with?
I want to know what women with felonies do, because I can tell you right now, men with felonies do construction. Like, that's That's where they go, because that's somewhere that accepts people with criminal records. So what do women do? Like, you don't see a lot of women in construction. There's some, but I'm just curious about that. Like,
yeah, I mean, one woman in recovery comes to mind as someone who's openly shared about her struggles with her felonies and trying to get them expunged. And she owns her own cleaning business. Mm. And I think she does well with that.
I actually know a few women that do cleaning businesses. Now I think they all have felonies. I'm like, that's what they do. They start cleaning.
You just answered that question.
Yeah.
They start cleaning businesses.
Yeah.
Work for cleaning businesses.
There's a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy going on there, right? Like, anytime that I tell myself I can't do something because, well, then I'm not going to do it. And Jason, I think you're probably a better one to speak about this than I am, because it does seem a little, for me to say that without a felony is all well and good, right? But like, my understanding is that your background was a little tough and held you back at times, and now you have a career that you love, right?
Yeah. So to try to keep this version short, I was in a construction job. And, you know, they accepted me. And then this guy I ran into that I knew told me I should try to apply for the Plumbers and Steamfitters Union. And I was like, oh, man, I don't know. I got a background. Like, it always made me nervous. And my plan was to never, you know, look, I had the felonies, but I also had a low sense of self, like extremely low. So I didn't want to apply anywhere and get rejected already. And then to have these felonies and know that my chances of rejection were increased was only worse. And so I stepped out on a limb. I was like, fuck it, I'll apply. We'll see what happens. Went through that whole process of testing, interviews, blah, blah, blah. And they sent me that acceptance letter like, hey, we're going to take you in. You're going to make this to start, 5 years of schooling with us, and then you'll make this at the end. And it was a pretty good amount of money. And it was like, oh my God, it felt, and I say this a lot, it felt, I look back at it now, like a lot of my relationships, right? I would kind of put out feelers to like 10 girls, and then when one showed interest, it was like, you were the one I knew I wanted, right? like, oh, you'll accept me? You'll have me? Oh my God, that's so great, right? And that's what I felt like. I was like, oh my God, thank God, because if this place didn't accept me, my life would have been like really low wages for the rest of my life. But this place did, and now I have an opportunity with felonies to make decent money. Yay. What I didn't realize till later on was there was no real interest in me doing that. It was just all about the fact that they would take me and there was some decent money in there and I didn't have to be poor. And once I kind of realized that, like, I'm not limited, and this was through some pretty extensive therapy work, but it was like, you know, I can choose what the fuck I want and go after it. And even that was kind of anxiety inducing, because the two colleges I went to when I went into my career field for social work, they both had to sit me down, interview me to accept me because of my fucking record, and then like advise me and tell me, hey, look, we can't guarantee that you'll actually be able to get a license once you get this degree. Like, we think you will. Seems like it, but we're not sure because you do have this right. And like, imagine going to school and having $100,000 in student fucking loan debt, and you can't get a license with what your degree is. And like, that's scary as fuck. But I kept faith through the process, right? And it did work out. But it's still like one of those things that's like, it could definitely be intimidating, and I could see why it would hold people up in their life. And I don't know. I mean, I've now hold three different Maryland licenses. I have a plumbing license, a HVAC license, and a social work license. So I guess it doesn't always hold you up, and maybe we're getting more used to the idea of having people with backgrounds holding licenses for the state. But
so you do know I'm going to start calling you when I have plumbing and HVAC issues, right?
I will specify. I hold licenses. I don't actually know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm not going to lie. You know what I did?
Take a test?
I hung big steel pipe in new fucking gigantic buildings, and we welded it together. Like, I don't know about your home toilet or not. Like, I don't know nothing about none of that shit.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
What was your experience, Billy? Because, I mean, you got some background. Like, what did...
So, I think talking earlier about the felonies, what Carolina said about felonies and holding people back, immediately what I thought is pretty much exactly what you said. I think a lot of times that becomes an easy excuse when you have low self-esteem and you fear rejection? Because I've thought about that for myself in other areas. Like I've, you know, at times thought, well, I should get a different job or I should look into a different career because mine isn't personally fulfilling. I'm good at my job, but it's not personally, like, I don't feel like rewarded at the end of the day. I get no moral satisfaction out of it. And what holds me back in those cases is like, I'm not going to be able to make as much money. I'm going to have to start somewhere low and work my way up. Now I'm in a position of authority. I don't want to do all that. You know, it's just a bunch of excuses to not do the fucking work because it might be uncomfortable for me is what it boils down to. So when I hear that, you know, oh, I have felonies, that's what I hear. It's probably a little unfair to put that on everyone. That's probably not true. But for me, I can make excuses to not try, you know. But anyway, I worked for a family business, so my career, I mean, my criminal record never really mattered much. And then after my family business went out, I went to work for someone I met in recovery. So it was someone that owned a business in recovery, and he said, hey, I know you need a job, just come work for me. So my record has never held me back. I will say when we did our work camp and traveling around, I had a little bit of worry about my record. But at that point, it had been like 15 years later and no one ever brought it up. No one ever asked me about it. I mean, I figured if they brought it up, I would
answer it. Maryland law, like we all say, oh, we have this law where companies can't look at your old offenses after so many years.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know we had a law like that.
Well, it's probably useful that you didn't know because it's a fucking useless law. Because if you actually look into it, the law says that companies can't take that into account. They still look it up. They still see it.
And they can ask you on applications.
Can't take it into account if it's over a certain amount of years old.
And
which
anyone
means
can go
nothing.
On case search.
Right.
Yeah.
And
my whole history is
the
out there.
So on a lot of applications, they will ask you, have you ever been convicted of a crime? What are the details? So like now the way I answer that most time, because I try to be honest, you know, and stuff. And even like for, we've talked about this before, but like volunteering for Little League and stuff like that, they'll ask you those questions. And it's like, do I want to just say no and hope that they don't look or that it's so far? But so usually I answer that by saying, yes, I got a couple of drug charges back when I was 19 years old. It's been X amount of years since I've been in any trouble. And I just answer it like that. Like, I don't get too much detail, and I'm vague enough that it's, and it's the truth. I'm not lying if they ever wanted to dig in. And no one's ever really dug into the or asked me to go into detail much more.
And I think that's super informative, too, because along with the job aspect, like, I skipped out on the idea of coaching for any of my kids' teams for 7 years because I was terrified that they would say, well, you got a background, you can't, because it's right on there. And it says, if you have this background, you can't be on the field with them and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, what the fuck? Like, even outside of the work environment, like, that's life fulfillment, right? I want to be a part of my kids' lives, help out the community, show up and volunteer to be a coach. They're always begging for coaches. Nobody wants to do this shit. And yet here I am, and I won't step up, not because I don't have the ability or the time, but because I'm worried that I'm going to be singled out in the community. It's like, that's a fucked up thing, man.
Right. Yeah, I would say as I mentioned, I don't have felonies and my record is expunged now.
Squeaky clean.
Yeah, it is, ironically. But I guess my experiences went, so I mentioned that, you know, I went from working in a treatment center, which obviously I don't think they were super concerned about my background.
They look for the record.
She doesn't have a record. We can't hire her.
She might not even have been an addict.
Right.
But then I moved over to nanny, which is that is a field where felonies are like not even in consideration. Yeah. Like you have anything on your background, and parents are not going to want you around their kids.
Hell no.
I mean, I even at one point applied for a job with people I knew in AA, and when they found, like, they were talking to me until they found out it was me, and even two people being in recovery themselves, when they found out it was me in recovery, communication stopped. So even people in recovery don't want to hire people with that kind of background to take care of their kids. But I had a really successful career for 8 years as a nanny, and You know, I did that by, quite honestly, like...
I can't picture you as a nanny. I'm sorry.
Really?
I'm picturing little British kids like, Nanny Caroline.
No, I didn't work for any British families.
Can we go to the park?
There wasn't a lot of that. So I was babies and toddlers. Okay. So no, like, full sentence, very rarely full sentences. But, you know, I did have a really good run nannying while I was in college. And then even thereafter, and that was really because I built up a really strong reputation. So I started working for a family. I don't remember how I got in with my first family, but I got good references as a result of that. And that kind of fed me through. And I do remember at one point there was a family that I had interviewed with, and they said something about a background check. And like, I think I told them I found something else. Mm. So like, I knew like that's not going to go so well for me. So let me try over here. So
did any of the husbands buy you cars or anything?
No, one family replaced my tires for me because I was transporting their kid around. Yeah, okay. That was about it. Yeah. I was not the nanny that like got taken to like Cabo for a month with the family or anything.
You weren't
like, it was
nanny
not,
in the right people.
I guess not.
Got a nanny dad.
This episode has been brought to you in part by Voices of Hope, Inc., a nonprofit recovery organization made up of people in recovery, family members, and allies. Together, members strive to protect the dignity of those that use drugs and those in recovery by advocating for treatment, harm reduction and support resources, and mentoring. Please visit us at www.voicesofhopemaryland.org and consider donating to our cause.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You brought up case search a few minutes ago, and that's interesting. So I was in a session the other day, and somebody was talking about somebody that was in their life and how they were looking them up and how they use case search all the time. And I'm not going to lie, I was sitting there like, oh, fuck. How long till you look me up, right? Or have you already? Like, what do you... But, I mean, I don't know.
I think a lot of normal people don't know about case search. I think the knowledge of that system is much more prevalent in our community than, like, at the broader level. But there's certainly, like, normies who know about case search.
Right.
Would you know, do they have something similar in all states, or is that just a Maryland
imagine
thing?
But you know what, I just heard the other day that I think somebody, and look, this is hearsay information, so take that for what it is, but they said Delaware is much more tight-lipped about that when I was asking, because we were talking about the case search thing.
Well, and part of that is I work in Delaware and I haven't been able to find a case search type
Yeah,
thing.
I don't. So maybe every state doesn't. Maybe
because we look for different reasons as well. We investigate people for different reasons.
Right. I mean, it's not necessarily, I think there's a problem with looking on case search. I don't like the idea, but you know, if you're going to use it, okay. But what are you doing once you find stuff out, right? Is it, oh, they have a record, so that's the end of it? Or can I look at this on a case-by-case basis and say, well, you know, this is what happened. This is how long ago it was. Like, let me hear what they have to say and how they present themselves today. And maybe they're, because I mean, the whole idea is that we can become new people.
And
right?
Yeah, so I think honesty, at least, you know, again, this is my experience. I think honesty is going to be the best policy if you're trying for a career. If you're just trying to get a job at, you know, somewhere to make some money, whatever. But like, I had gotten a job for this was back when I was young in retail, selling cell phones for whatever, and I worked there like 3 or 4 months, and I don't know what took so long, but all of a sudden they came back one day and they're like, dude, we have to fire you, you know, you put on your application, you didn't have a record, and we looked up your record, and you have a record.
I heard that so many times
and
early in
so,
recovery.
Yeah, so I had been working there a couple of months, you know? So, I mean, I didn't feel like that was a career choice, but if it was, like, if that was a field I was trying to get into as a career, and I feel like, yeah, I broke in, yeah, I was dishonest, and they found out, and so they aren't going to fucking keep you then. You hope that if you're honest, you might have a chance to explain yourself. Or
I can't believe they had cell phones when you were young.
Yeah. That would have been crazy. 93 or 4.
Yeah, yeah. That is crazy.
Early days of cell phones.
They had those ones that like were in the car phones that were like that big. Like, I remember my
parents wasn't there. This was
those.
Still, of course, they didn't have smartphones, but you had, this was for Verizon.
Flip phones?
Yeah, a lot of flip phones.
They had a little book bag you had to carry with them.
Yeah. They weren't near as expensive as they are now.
I'm picturing
they
like Vietnam military. Like your buddy has to carry it on his back and you like call him over. I need the radio guy. I think, well, one of the things that's come up during this is the idea of, I keep hearing that we got jobs through people we knew. And I think that is a resource that I don't want to overlook, right? Like even outside of recovery, that has been my experience. It's very easy or helpful or useful to get jobs from people you know. And I don't think that's necessarily a terrible thing at all times, right? Like, look around, especially if you're earlier on, or maybe even if you're not earlier on, look around your recovery community. Who's doing something you like? Like, a couple of my jobs definitely came because of people that were close in my network of recovery friends. And it was like, oh, there's openings there. I'm coming.
Yeah, right. For and sure.
And if you're consistent and a person that's living by values and doing the right things, you know, people will take a risk on you or put their neck out for you, give you references and things like that.
And to speak on that, I've always been like, when I didn't like myself, I was always worried about how that looked. Like, oh my God, if I want to get him in my job, I got to worry about how he performs because that affects how I look. Fuck all that. Right. I'll say, nah, yeah, sure, hire him. Try him out. Like, maybe not so much in my job now. I'll be honest. Like, well, this is what I know about him, right? Do what you want with that. But I don't have to feel guilty about, like, I don't give a fuck if I ask for somebody to get hired and they don't do well. Like, that's on them. Yeah, that's not me.
I've been responsible for getting a few people at my current company jobs, and that was a case where when they came there and worked in the beginning, they did real well because they were strong in their recovery. And then over time, like, their recovery waned, and you could tell they were and then they became bad employees and had to be fired. And it's like,
would
can't
you not
guarantee.
Do it again, though?
It would depend on the person. Huh. I mean, and it's the same thing. Now, again, I'm lucky, you know, my boss understands people in addiction. So, you know, I mean, what I've seen, at least for the most part, is that we had those people come in and do that. That's happened with probably 20 other people over the years that I've been there for a myriad of different reasons, divorce, you know, whatever, people that aren't even addicts. I mean, I think some of these employment issues are just common employment issues. But no, I mean, if we had somebody needed a job and we had an opening and thought they'd be good at it, if they were in recovery, I wouldn't necessarily automatically say this is a person we need because they're in recovery, but I wouldn't disqualify them either.
Yeah, I've recommended, you know, I, for example, I have a really good friend who I have a ton of faith in and know she is a great person. That I really went to bat for a couple of roles at my company, and felt really comfortable doing that. You know, I know her; she's a hard worker. She here's her cover letter. Like, I think she would be great. Whereas there's other people that I've been like, yeah, if there's anything you find, like, here's the website, check it out. If there's anything you find, I'm sure I'm willing to recommend you. And in those cases, it would be much more of a like, I don't know them well. They seem like a good, you know what I mean? Like, I'm gonna make my recommendation based on what I do or don't know about someone. So I'm not going to go to bat and completely vouch for someone that I don't feel comfortable.
Yeah. And I had a weird situation one time at work. So the flip side of that. So I was at work. This person shows up at my job with this other person who I don't know and says, hey, this is my boyfriend. He just moved down here from New Jersey. He does HVAC work and he's in recovery. Can't you get him a job here? Like, at my job in front of like my coworkers and so shit. Like, that's not something my coworkers necessarily know that I'm in recovery. It wasn't even a person I was overly close with. It was just someone I knew from meetings. Like, we weren't fucking friends. You know what I mean? It wasn't someone that was even like in my phone list of contacts. You know what I mean? It was just someone who kind of knew, but they knew that I worked in recovery and what I did. I mean, that I worked in HVAC. And just was like, well, my boyfriend works in HVAC and he's in recovery, so you're supposed to give him a job. And they got mad at me because I was like, he can fill out an application, but we're not really hiring right now. I don't, you know, that's not how this works.
Right.
As
you know.
Soon as I get some time on my hands, I'm going to start calling Billy's work. Hey, is that Narcotics Anonymous guy there? Is he still working there?
But that, don't do that. Don't do that to people.
Right.
Yeah, show I will up at their say, job. Though. I think that can be another excuse that people use is, oh, well, I don't know anyone, right? And so while tapping your resources, whatever they may be, you know, your personal connections is a great option when you have it. There's certainly other ways to get into a career path besides that.
Well, and the way that worked for me wasn't, like, I just went to meetings and shared honestly about where I was, you know? I was like, hey, I worked for my family's business most of my life. I thought that's what I was going to be doing the rest of my life. Apparently, that's not working out. Now I'm going to be unemployed. I don't know what I'm going to do. And that's all I said. And then someone approached me who I didn't even necessarily – I mean, I probably knew he had a business or whatever, but I, you know, wasn't like – I wasn't like fishing for a job. I was just being honest about where I was.
Well, and I think that's an important point because like and this all depends. Are we searching for a career or are we searching for a job just in the immediate, I'm in recovery and I need some work and some money and to get back into, you know, societal living. But yeah, just share, right? Hey, there is no work. I'm looking for some kind of work, right? I see so many posts on Facebook regularly because maybe all these guys with felonies have their own construction companies now, right? And they're always like, man, I need some day labor. I need this kind of help. Does anybody have these kind of skills? Like, there's people looking for people all the time. And we are a wealthy community of networking that we have, you know, just by association with it. And so I think that's useful. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to find your dream job that way. You might, but it's something to get started.
But right, and you can, right? So like even that day labor job that might feel below you, if you go into that circumstance and show your best self and you're working hard and you're willing to do whatever it takes, that very often, I think, you know, that was my experience, not day labor. My experience. So my undergrad degree, which I was nannying while I got, was in psychology. And when I graduated with that degree, and I realized that, you know, going on to get my master's and my doctorate was probably not
your calling.
Well, not that. No, it was really more the financial aspects of continuing to be in school for another 7 years. What I didn't have at that point that I did down the road have was humility, because everyone had told me at that point that I should get an internship. And a lot of times at that point, internships were low paid or unpaid. And I was like, well, I just went to school for it was 5 years, but should have been four. I just went to school for all this time. I shouldn't have to go take a job where I'm not being paid. And I didn't have the humility. And so I just kept nannying. And, you know, nannying was great pay at 20. It was not as great pay as I was starting to approach 30. And so I decided to go back to school. And what I did different this time was have the willingness to take an internship. And lo and behold, I ended up getting an internship where I work now in a field that wasn't like, so I took an internship in business development, knowing 100% without a doubt that I did not want to go into business development. That was not my objective, but this was a company that was willing to give me a quote unquote real job. There was pay. It was a company that I was seeing a track record that they had employees that had been there 15, 20 years and that people were able to move around. And so I took that internship as kind of just a step in the right direction, mm-hmm. not a, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And within 2 months, I had found an opening within the company for, you know, a quote unquote, like full-time job. Again, in a field that I was much more open to, but not something I'd ever planned on going into. And that has led me to where I am today. And certainly, so my undergrad degree is in psychology. I'm more than halfway through a graduate degree in IT, which I found out I hate while going to school for it. Mm. And now I'm back in grad school trying to redirect that in a different way. But I work kind of in sales enablement now. And I never in a million years, 10 years ago, would have told you that that's where I wanted to be. But I love my job. And I don't think it's my calling, but I think my calling, if I have a calling, my calling is to have a job that I love because that affects my happiness on such a broad scale, right? Because I'm spending 40, 50 hours a week doing this. It's a huge part of my life. And if I don't love the job that I have, it's going to impact my happiness across the board.
And not to get, I guess that's in line with the topic of like, how do we find our job? One of the things I find interesting, and this was kind of my life perspective for a long time, and it makes sense that because I haven't followed that perspective that I would have a different opinion now. And so I don't want anybody to think that like I think I have the right opinion and there's a wrong one that you two have. That's not what I'm saying here. But I do find that a lot of us fall into this idea of like we get somewhere and then like when I got a job, I stopped looking for jobs,
right?
I like, why look? I have one. There's no point. And even when that wasn't the job I wanted, it was almost like I almost waited till it was like way too late in the game of me completely and utterly hating my job to even think about the idea of looking for something else. And in, you know, olden days where I come from, this was a little tougher because you had to look for jobs on your days off. You had to go like place to place and put in applications. You couldn't like surf the internet in the evenings when you were off. But I'm fascinated by this idea at this point with my change of my life of people that kind of fall into somewhere and then just stay. And I'm like, are you really happy there? Did you really? That to me feels like soulmate kind of shit. I'm like, did you really like, oh my God, the heavens just placed you right where you were supposed to be from the get-go. Who knew, right? Like that seems so baffling to me. And I'm like, and you say you're happy and Billy sounds pretty happy too. And that's great. But I'm like, I can't imagine, at least the jobs I was at, I can't imagine being happy at any of them for a long, super long period of time. And I'm amazed kind of at this idea of, well, I'm here and okay, there's a little chance for moving up the ladder and progressing. So that's good enough for me versus like, what is it that I really want to do with my life and how do I want to impact the world or maybe even a different perspective of what tools and gifts do I feel like I have that I'm just naturally maybe better at other people than, and where could they be useful in the world?
And I think I'm the second, right? Like, I don't think just based on the jobs that are available in the U.S. at least, if you look at them and you divide them out by like ones that actually bring substantial value to society, the do-gooder jobs, right? That is a small fraction of like the amount of jobs that need to get done. So I work in corporate America. It is not, my job is not do-gooder, right? Like it's not. But I can look at the good that I do for the people that I'm working with on a day-to-day basis and get that do-gooder feeling, right? Mm-hmm. Like I have employees that I certainly hope that I'm helping and helping them to develop their career and develop their skill sets. And then I have internal clients within our business that I hope I'm making their lives easier, right? But no, I mean, I don't work in a nonprofit. I'm not feeding the hungry. I'm not. Well,
and when I say, I didn't mean it to come across like you had to be in a quote unquote do-gooder job. Like, I just mean like, what are my talents? Like maybe your talent is incredibly inventing video games that make people happy, right? Right. Like, it's not about right. so much do-gooder. I wasn't coming from that aspect, but just
what do we feel
doing?
Well, I think it's great to be able
doing.
To do that. Like, my sister works in kind of the nonprofit sector, and, like, for her, that is a really strong conviction. Like, she's not willing to go outside of that right now, you know, and maybe not ever. And it's awesome to be able to have that drive, but I think there's value to your point. There's value to be derived even if you're not in kind of one of more those traditional like helping fields.
Right.
For me, what I found is I think the second way you framed it is like, what are your skills and how can they be applied? Your talents that maybe other people don't have. And like, even though I didn't go to school for what I'm doing, like my degree in psychology really built my writing abilities, and I have a strong I love creativity. I love anything that, and so like my job really, really plays well to my writing abilities and allows me to be very creative. And so but that I think that's the point, right? Like there's a million jobs out here, and like I didn't even know that this was like a job when I was in college. I wasn't like, oh, there's someone who like leads these proposal responses and helps the sales team to be more effective. Like, I didn't know that was a job. I did fall into it and I worked really hard. I think that's the other piece. But I do love my job. I don't know if I'm kind of like, you look really baffled.
No. I'm sitting here picturing, right? And it's, I feel like I'm not giving Billy a chance to even talk on that. But it's kind of a follow-up to what you're saying is, like, so both of you are kind of in these management level positions and you do feel really useful and you feel like you're good to your employees and can help the business and super useful people and great at what you're doing. And I still, I guess there's that question of, well, but what if there was a little shift in that could even provide more fulfillment, right? Like maybe Billy is incredible and helps the people he manages, but maybe if he managed somewhere that was, I don't know, helping peers better, you know, help people in the addiction community find recovery. Maybe that would like take what he feels good about now and even still add a little more flavor of what he likes. It's kind of like when you get a really good tasting meal, but you're like, oh, just a little bit of salt on this will really fucking kill it, right? And for you, you're like creative writing and these kind of things. And I'm like, well, maybe she needs to like, you know, maybe it's writing. Maybe it's writing books. Maybe it's being a fucking author. Maybe it's, you know, some other management type that is still helping people, but even more like just adds that extra. I'm like, I don't know. And I'm not saying it has to be, right? I think a lot of us can live fulfilled lives, but there is that question of like, but what if you were open to another position that has all the things yours does, but also has this other flavor that somehow, you know, hits your taste buds really well for what you want?
Well, I think there's a difference between being open to and constantly looking for the next thing. Mm. So this is a little bit of like what kind of broach that this conversation. When I was here the last time, I think I was talking to you guys about, you know, someone at my company who's a little further along in their career asking me what's next. And me feeling really bad that I didn't have the answer to that, right? So I got promoted into my current role in like March, April of this year. It's been like 6 months. And so I started to feel a little down on myself that I didn't have the like, what is my next role? Where am I going from here? But on the flip side, like I feel like there's a lot of value into like finding happiness where you are and not always needing to like, as soon as I achieve one goal, now the next one needs to be, you know, because that constant like never being satisfied with where I am is not, for me, not super great for my mental health. So like while there might be a role out there that would make me even happier and bring me even more joy and make me feel more fulfilled, that thought that there might be something better out there is not a good thought for me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I would kind of piggyback off that idea, but for me, it goes back to like the old addict thing. It's like we seek satisfaction, you know, for outside things to satisfy that inner gnawing. And it's like my personal, you know, spirituality and fulfillment and satisfaction aren't necessarily dictated by the world and all these outside circumstances. Like, I seek things and do things for my personal recovery, and maybe it's stuff that I do with my kids or my family. Like, for me, I've found what things I do that are in alignment with my values, you know, and the job is my job. Like, that's where I go, because I've had some different jobs, and what I've personally, my opinion, experience, whatever, with jobs is that they all have good and bad and equally, you know, things you got to weigh out. You know, we did the work camping thing and traveled around and worked at these campgrounds and all that. It's great. I loved it. I was outside all the time doing groundskeeping and maintenance. My one buddy used to call it beautification. You know, you're doing all this beautifying things and make things look pretty and building shit. It's fun. It's great. Money was terrible. You know what I mean? Money was terrible. So I'm doing this work that I really liked. In the meantime, I'm fucking home stressing and my anxiety's at 11 because we're trying to figure out financial stuff, you know? So there's a balance. And it's not that I can't necessarily do both, but like my job that I have now affords a certain level of comfortableness. That's not even a word, but, you know, there's a level of comfort that I get from being there. There's a level of I go to work, I do my job, I'm confident in it. You know, security to some degree. I think the pandemic was interesting with security stuff. But, you know, there's a balance there. And like when I left, I had one opinion. And when I came back to work there, I had a different opinion of like, no, I'm coming back here by choice of free will, that this is what I want to do. I knew I wasn't trapped there because I had left. You know what I mean? I knew I had other options out there because I fucking just did other stuff.
I treated my marriage like that. It worked well.
So when I went back, it was a full free choice of like, no, this is a conscious decision on what I want to do, and this is where I want to be. I've looked at the you know, values that I have compared to the values that this job is offering, and that's what I want to do. And so my fulfillment doesn't come from my job. It comes from other things. You know, for me, it's a lot of involvement in recovery and stuff like this, doing the podcast, you know, things like that.
I feel like we'll all agree to that, but then we'll see the guy who's got 20 years clean, who's still living in a recovery house, who's on his 18th fast food job working the drive-through window at McDonald's, and we'll be like, oh, well, why doesn't he aspire to be more?
I wouldn't think that at all.
Really? Oh, man, that's definitely.
I mean, if that's what you want to do with your life. You know, it's a short fucking
Living in the recovery house part is the part that gets me. I'm like, you have to, like, you're settling. You're settling. If you're living in a
recovery. Why is that contentment any different than anywhere else? Like, what if you don't have a family and that's not what you want?
Buddhists
and you want
to
live alone? Like, why wouldn't you just
want
to rent a room?
I don't know. I mean, there's so much chaos in living in a recovery house. How is that anyone's, like, favorite place to be?
Man, you are training people to be fucking adult, hopefully. Men, you know, teaching them how to live, teaching them a skill set.
I guess.
So, could be beautiful.
We're getting a little late in the time factor here, but just another idea that goes along kind of with these felonies that I think a lot of us face is that we come in with these large work history gaps on our resumes or applications, right? How do you explain that? Or why do you have to explain that? Or like, and maybe the pandemic actually softens some of that, right? There might be a whole lot of work history gaps for a lot of fucking people, but that's another limitation that's going to hinder us, right? Or you have people, and I think this is changing slowly, but people who have opinions of people who've been in addiction at some point in time or another. So is that when you say, oh, well, I was an alcoholic instead of I was an addict, right? Like, because you want to soften it and have more social acceptability. So we do come in with these walls, right? These things in our way that we either have to knock down or go around. Like, there's borders for us that I feel like the average Joe doesn't have,
right?
Beyond just figuring out where we want to be.
And I think with the employment gaps, I will say, I think that's where baby steps help, right? Like, I'm in a career now with 16 years clean that is a career and pays my bills. But 16 years ago, I wasn't in a career. 16 years ago, I was working at KFC or, like, you know what I mean? Like, I started with those jobs that, like, didn't care about any of that stuff.
Did they have the chicken bowls then? I love the chicken bowls.
So the biscuits were my nemesis.
Really?
Though. Oh,
sadness
my. Because I would eat, like, when they come right out of the oven.
They're warm.
Have you heard Patton Oswalt talk about the sadness bowls?
No.
He's a comedian. You should listen.
I like the Popeyes
the KFC
biscuits, though.
Bowls. Anyway.
Even though they're dry.
But I started there. And I got some of those jobs to build the work history. They didn't have a whole lot of requirements on me, but they let me build some work history while I did some other stuff. Like for me, going back to school was really key. Because that's another way to explain work history, right? Is while I was in college,
I use that one.
Yeah.
I took 7 years off of work.
Sure.
I worked some under the table shit, but yeah.
For sure.
In recovery, I was like, nope, 7 years, no work history. I'm good with it.
And I'll tell you, I mean, the pandemic only goes so far. I'm in the process of hiring right now for an entry-level role. And there's red flags for me if I see someone who hasn't been working for a year and a half, especially if their last role ended in 2019. I'm like, well, what have you been doing?
They were preparing for the pandemic.
Or changing. They knew it was coming.
Right.
They saw it coming before all of us.
But also, I mean, if someone has a gap in their employment and I'm like, well, why haven't you been working for a year? If they're honest, I've been searching. I haven't been able to find anything.
Because I didn't want to.
Don't say that.
Really? Yeah. Why? If you have the ability and you don't want to work, why the fuck would anybody want you to?
To me, that screams like, I'm not driven. I'm not a hard worker.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now you're opening a whole other can of worms. Like, why the fuck do I have to be driven for society's money? Fuck that shit.
Well, you don't, but you need to be driven to have a job working for me.
You need to be driven so that companies know you're going to be a good employee for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's fucking stupid.
Why? Why would that be stupid? So I'm hiring an entry-level role, right? And I would gladly take someone like just out of college with no work experience, honestly. What matters to me for this person is that they're personable. They have good communication skills. They can write. And they're driven. They want to work. I need someone who wants to work, who wants to learn, who wants to work hard.
That's really why we're all poor.
All I need.
We got to keep everybody poor so they're driven to work.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care if people are like, not. I mean, no, I'm driven to work. I'm not poor.
Because you work.
But I'm driven still.
Right, but like, if we didn't need money, if everything you needed was delivered on the first of the month by the fucking delivery fairies or whatever, they're like, here's your food for the month, here's, you know, you got a place to live, you're good to go. I don't want to fucking work.
No, me neither.
Right. So we all got to be kept poor and in need of shit in order to be driven to do whatever these companies slave us and tell
but
us to
I'm
do.
Also
fuck all that.
No, I'm also inherently driven because if I was in a situation where I didn't need to, like I don't think there's any fairies that are going to deliver everything, but if I came from wealth, right? If my family had tons of wealth and I was just independently wealthy, I would be driven to do other things. I probably would not work at my current job. I probably would want to do something, probably, you know, rescuing animals or like that's probably what I would focus on, but I would still have drive within those efforts.
And I think my take on this whole how to find your job in recovery idea is what the fuck would you do if you didn't have to have money in life? Because that's probably what you really want to do and will bring you the most satisfaction. Like if all your shit was taken care of, if you were just wealthy for no good reason, whatever, where would you invest your time? Because I agree. I think we would all do something, right? Maybe I'd golf every fucking day. Maybe I need to go be a golf instructor or something. Maybe I would help animals. Maybe I would just go volunteer at the homeless shelter. Whatever the fuck it is I would do if I didn't have to do anything for money, I truly think that's what the fuck we want to do.
But that's not always feasible. And money does help happiness to a certain degree. Not being able to meet your basic needs and wants has a massive toll on happiness.
Well, and that's where you get into the discussion of figuring out what is my basic needs. Is it renting a recovery house room and just being chill or renting a room in some old person's basement where nothing ever happens and I'm happy and I don't need a whole lot of shit? Or is it that I need a Xbox and Wi-Fi to play my online games because that's what my happiness is? And so that's an interesting question. So for the sake of time, and I'm guessing we'll have a part two to this since we definitely didn't get into a whole lot of it. Let's have like a final recap of where do you start? Like what's the first important parts? Like give us a couple things about the first important parts of how to start even thinking about work in recovery.
If you're new, I would say just try to be honest about your situation rather than lie and manipulate your way into a job. The other thing is just look at the opportunities that you have. My advice would be if you look at the opportunities that you have, pick the one that you think is going to be the best for now. Maybe it's not your career chosen, whatever, but, you know, as Caroline mentioned, sometimes just getting in a job and having a job for a consistent period of time, mm-hmm. showing some consistency, one, it looks good, and two, you may be able to get some references from that employer, you know, whether it's to go back to school or do some other things. In a small rural community like this, like having a personal reference from a business, you know, leader in this community carries some fucking weight. So, you know, maybe you only go work for the restaurant and wash dishes for 3 years. But, you know, you get the owner of the restaurant says, hey, was a great employee, showed up every day, was honest, dependable, hard worker. I think, you know, he'd really do well at some new opportunities. That shit matters. Yeah. That matters to employers.
In a small community where everybody knows everybody, that definitely matters. What do you got, Caroline?
Willingness and baby steps, right? You're not, more than likely, you're not going to find your dream job day one. It takes a couple of jobs before that to get there. But, you know, having the willingness to do things that maybe aren't exactly what you want to be doing at that very moment. And then also kind of keeping your eyes and ears open for other opportunities and being willing to, no matter what you're doing, work hard and show that you want to be there and you want to succeed, I think goes a long way. Employers are always looking for people who are willing to go above and beyond.
Yeah, I definitely like all of that. I think, you know, being honest from the get-go is hugely important. Let's just start where I am and work to where I'm not. I think taking different jobs is fine, right? Sometimes we have to know what we aren't before we can know what we are. So just go have those experiences. Oh, shit, I worked construction for 6 months. This fucking sucks. I don't ever want to do this again, right? Let me go somewhere else. And dream big. Rejection is God's protection, man. I don't know if I really believe that all the time, but go into it with that attitude. If they fucking reject me, it's because I'm being saved from some miserable fucking work career that I would have had if I was here. Tell somebody up front, hey, I'm applying for this job. I'm scared I won't get it. I might need to cry on your shoulder when I don't get it. Right. Okay, then we'll cry on our shoulders and we'll be all right. And we'll try to apply for the next one. But don't be held back by this work history gaps or felonies or anything else, man. Go for what the fuck you want.
Yeah, and I heard an interesting saying recently, so I'm going to use it to kind of close out. It's a guy said, when one door closes, another one opens, but sometimes the hallway is really fucking narrow.
Yeah, absolutely. So start, get a job, and hopefully we'll have some more advice for you in the next month about what to do once you're at that job. Take it easy. Did you like this episode? Share it with people you think might get something out of it. Check out the rest of our episodes at recoverysortof.com. Also, while you're there, you can find ways to link up with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, YouTube, anything. We're always looking for new ideas. Got an idea you want us to look into? Reach out to us.